Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. How has the way America uses jails changed over the years? What reforms are needed in the future? What reforms are needed urgently? The Safety and Justice Challenge is supported by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Its goal is to help communities across the country find ways to reduce over-incarceration. We're broadcasting live this week from the Black Hills Bureau in downtown Rapid City. Joining me in the studio right now, we have Rapid City Police Chief Carl Jegeris. Thanks for being here, sir.
You are welcome. Good morning.
Also with us, Pennington County Sheriff Kevin Tome. Thanks for being here as well.
Good morning. Thanks for the invite.
Let's start with an overview of the MacArthur Safety and Justice Challenge. Chief, would you like to begin?
Sure. For about the past 2 years, several of the criminal justice system leadership have been working together on a project to try to acquire a very large grant for our community so that we can better serve the community in a more efficient and effective manner. And we are at the timeline of, we're kind of on the edge of our seats because we know that within the next month we'll be learning if we are successful in our effort to acquire this grant. And if we are, what it will mean, it will be an infusion of $1 million a year for the next 2 years for our local criminal justice system so that we can really dial down and work towards reducing incarceration. We, in Rapid City, on the average year, we arrest over 8,000 individuals. And really that number is a little overinflated because a lot of the cases are the same individual being arrested over and over and over for, in the scope of things, a relatively low-level offense. So we're utilizing incarceration to try to address social issues, a criminal justice response that I think that if we really get strategic about it, we can be more efficient for our taxpayers and we can provide better rehabilitation services for the most vulnerable in our community. So that's what we're trying to accomplish here.
How long has it been? A couple years in the planning? Sheriff, you want to talk about some of those early conversations and how they've developed as you sort of poise to hopefully receive the grant?
Yeah, and we've received a lot of support from the MacArthur Foundation already. It's been a couple year process and we received $150,000, you know, mini grant, if you will, 2 years ago, and then $150,000 this past year. And we've received probably about $200,000 in what I call technical assistance. They've had people working alongside us to kind of refine and define the four initiatives that we've put into our final grant. You know, initially there was 200 sites from around the country that applied for the Safety and Justice Challenge. The MacArthur Foundation put up $75 million, and then it was cut down to 20 sites. The 20 competed for what I'll call the bigger money. 11 got that, 9 didn't, and then we continued. We were one of the 9, so we continued in the process, and now we're vying for the bigger pot of money with the MacArthur Foundation.
How much in South Dakota, in the state of South Dakota, does Senate Bill 70 have to do with the conversation? Does that tie in to what you're already looking at? Does it tie into what the MacArthur Foundation is already looking at? Or are they two separate conversations?
I would say that just from a philosophical approach, they're very similar in nature, so they complement each other. Really, I think what we are coming to recognize as a community is that when you add all of the city tax dollars, county tax dollars, and then state tax dollars that come together to process an arrest, we are spending an exorbitant amount of the taxpayers' hard-earned resources to address problems that if we were more strategic, I think that we can be more effective to reduce those problems overall. So here we are in beautiful downtown Rapid City, and there are issues that it's likely we will make an arrest in downtown Rapid City today, our department. And the community sees that arrest occur, but what they don't see is all of the rest of the process that occurs after the arrest, which includes the corrections staff from the sheriff's office that processes the arrest, houses the arrest. But then we get a prosecutor involved, a public defender involved, a judge will hear the allegations, a court reporter, the clerk of courts, and it goes on and on and on. And so really, if you add all of that resource together, we're not being very effective. And I think that Senate Bill 70 and the MacArthur Foundation Challenge is causing us in the criminal justice system to collaborate at a level that we've never done before to understand how we can make our, how we can streamline our system so that it's better for everybody, both the community and the offenders.
Is this a matter of retraining police officers and deputies on how to do their job, when to make an arrest and when not to make an arrest, or is it more giving other options so there is an alternate path to an arrest?
Both are very critical. So we need to produce additional resources, so an alternative to the arrest. For example, as we speak, the county is leading an effort, and the city is partnering in that, to relocate the Pennington County Alcohol and Drug Program and the detox program. And that is a needed element of our city, and it's much less expensive to place somebody into a detox setting than it is a correction setting.
Yeah, and I will go back to your one comment about Senate Bill 70, which is also known as the Public Safety Improvement Act in South Dakota. And the chief's correct, they do comment or complement each other, but the one distinction is, and this is why the Safety and Justice Challenge came about, is a lot of the reforms were done at the state level, which trickled down to the local level. This was a direct effort to look at local jails, and I think that's the one distinction. Again, they complement each other, but that was a distinction in the efforts with the MacArthur Foundation in terms of the Safety and Justice Challenge.
Sheriff Tom, let's talk about these four initiatives. Give me an idea of what, if you know, how have you positioned yourself to receive the grant? What will happen if the money starts coming in, $1 million a year?
Well, there's four different initiatives. One is tribal outreach. I'll just list them off and then come back to them. But tribal outreach, case processing, community supervision, and pretrial diversion. So those are the four categories under the current grant that we've submitted. Going back to tribal outreach, you know, of course, we have a disproportionate representation of Native Americans in our criminal justice system. You know, about 50% of the jail is Native American, while they represent about 10% of the county population, so over-representation. So we've tried to build some partnerships with the tribes, and that's what this grant would do as well in terms of creating some opportunities on the reservation for partnerships with the tribes as well here in Pennington County. And I don't know if you want to touch on the tribal stuff, Chief.
Sure. Well, I'll just share that the sheriff and I and other members from the criminal justice system have traveled to all three of our neighboring reservations, Cheyenne River, Rosebud, and Pine Ridge. And we've met with criminal justice professionals from each of those areas, and we've had good discussions on how we can be more effective to work towards rehabilitation of offenders. And, you know, one example is it's very healthy for an offender to do community service and to make reparations to their community. But what we've ran into is if you get in trouble in Pennington County, Rapid City, our system, the way it's set up, may restrict you from leaving and may restrict you from going home, and that can cause more problems and unintended consequences. So, you know, what we would like to develop is an opportunity to do community service at your home, wherever that may be, in your home community. And there's many things, but that's a good example, I think.
And then the next one is case processing, and that's really looking at how cases flow through the court system. So the courts are very engaged with us, you know, the unified judicial system here, and looking at getting a case, I don't want to say timely, but expedited through the system so offenders aren't sitting in jail longer than they need to be, and disposing of cases more quickly. And that frees up additional resources for other alternatives, maybe specialty courts like DUI court, drug court, veterans court, those sorts of things. So it frees up resources for that. The chief touched on the community supervision, and that's really people post-sentence. Instead of getting sentenced to 10 days in the county jail, maybe you have to do 40 hours of community service. Most people would rather see people out doing something than sitting in a jail cell doing nothing. And now there's a time for that, but if you want them to pay back a debt to society, so to speak, at the local level, let's have them contribute something to the community, and that's what the community supervision is. And the last piece, the pretrial diversion, there's several different subcategories under that. We use electronic monitoring. That's a bracelet that people wear. It can be pre-trial. If somebody has a condition of their bond, they may have to wear one. But we use it in for our work release population. Somebody's been sentenced, and again, rather than sitting in the jail cell and going out to work, they could be home with their family. They're still working, but there's more accountability than there was before because they're monitored 24/7. And within that, we also layer in some random drug testing. So they have to call in every day and see if it's their day to drug test. If it is, they have to show up and provide a UA for drug testing. And so there's a lot of accountability built into that. More cite and release. I don't know if you want to talk about cite and release. You're doing more of that than we are.
Sure. Just an example. For misdemeanor offenses, we have the option to release on scene with a citation in lieu of arrest. And last year, we had over 800 shoplifting offenses in the city of Rapid City. That's, in the neighborhood of 3 per day. And what we've done is we've encouraged officers to use discretion and to consider a release on scene and cite the person into court at a later date. In the end, you still have the same level of accountability, but we have less cost to the system, and I think it's more effective.
And I can just touch on the last two subcategories, if
sure.
That's all right.
Go ahead. Yes,
and then the Safe Solutions facility, which is the former NAU building over here on Kansas City Street. It's a city-county project, and that'll be the detox facility. And then Safe Solutions. Safe Solutions is basically, it's a harm reduction model we took from Haven for Hope in San Antonio, Texas, and one of several concepts we took from there. And then also the Crisis Care Center will be over there. So it'll be a single point of entry into the system. Law enforcement will bring somebody there. They'll either go to Safe Solutions, to detox, or to crisis care, or some combination thereof. So it's going to give us some alternatives that you talked about earlier. And then the last one is a young adult diversion program. And that was really the vision of the state's attorney, Mark Fargo, in his office. And it's been very successful. Over the past year, they've diverted almost 300 defendants through that program. And really what it's young people from age 18 to 25. We give juveniles a lot of breaks, but at 18 to 25, kids still make mistakes. And sometimes that follows them the rest of their life. There's specific criteria that identifies kids are eligible for this, and we work with community partners and find alternatives for them. If they complete it, then they can, walk away not having a criminal mark in their history, so to speak, as they start applying for jobs and other things. Been very successful.
How does mental health play into all of this?
I would say that, especially with our homeless population, there's oftentimes co-occurring issues, mental health and substance abuse combined. And so it is critical that that we are the gatekeepers of the criminal justice system. So we make the decision at the street level whether a person in crisis is going to go to jail and the criminal justice system, or if they're going to go to the hospital and seek mental health help. And I think that it's very difficult to get somebody transition from criminal justice to mental health after the fact. So both the sheriff's office and the police department have really committed to a higher level of training on how to diffuse mental health issues. We have a CIT concept, which is crisis intervention team, so that we can make the right decision in the field at the time of crisis and try to get people the help that they need, so that we don't end up having people with mental illness locked up in the jail. But I will tell you that the Pennington County Jail is one of the largest mental health providers in Western South Dakota, unfortunately.
Do the resources exist in Rapid City? Is there a place to take somebody for acute mental illness or a mental health crisis that they're in? Does the counseling exist for preventative care in the city?
Well, I don't think there's enough resources in Rapid City, Painted County, and probably not in any community in the state, frankly, at this point in time. And the chief referenced are mental health services at the jail, and those are people with a corresponding criminal charge. But in terms of this initiative, we have the Crisis Care Center that'll be delivering mental health services through the former NAU building, which will eventually become the Restoration Center as part of this bigger scheme in terms of Haven for Hope for Rapid City, you know, the Restoration Center, the Transformation Center, but we'll address mental health services there. And then we have formed, the chief and I and representatives of Regional Hospital have formed the Behavioral Health Alliance in Western South Dakota here to talk about how do we get more mental health services, you know, for our community, and that's an ongoing discussion now.
Does the grant money run out at some point after so many years? And if so, how do you ensure that you are putting things into place that will be long-lasting instead of temporary?
You know, I mean, sustainability is a part of any grant. I mean, because obviously at some point the grant money generally runs out. And we hope to be able to, you know, if we save resources by incarcerating less people, maybe we have less correctional staff, so we can divert those resources into other alternatives like the safe beds or detox or crisis care, whatever it might be. So that's the end game. The goal, if you will, is free up resources from there to use over here.
The big question, of course, is just poverty in general. When you talk about social issues, and are things being done in the city to sort of address poverty that will help make your job easier? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think many people have heard of the Collective Impact Initiative that several organizations in Rapid City have really contributed to try to address poverty from a community level, and so we have a lot of efforts in place that are going in parallel directions. And the end result, I'm very hopeful that the future for Rapid City, especially for those that struggle with mental illness or other related issues, is looking brighter.
When do you find out, and how competitive is this last stage of the grant? As you've done all this preparatory work, you said within a month?
We find out in September sometime.
September, all right. Are you feeling good about it, positive about it? Have you gotten positive feedback?
Yeah, we have gotten positive feedback about our grant, and also along the way, we've continued to work with MacArthur Foundation, some of their partners, by hosting other events here in Rapid City. We have a national group coming in to do a victims roundtable here in September. We hosted the National Association of Counties, people from various states here in Rapid City, Painted County, what, about 2 months ago, I guess it was, and looking at our practices and what we're doing. So I take that as a positive sign if they're asking people to come here and look at what we're doing,
right,
that we're doing something right.
The changes that you're hoping to make, if you don't get and become one of the core grant recipients, do you feel like the work that you've put into it is worth it and has traction on its own, or is it just really tied to that big amount of grant money that you need to make it happen?
Well, if MacArthur's listening, we need the money.
We need the money.
Yeah. But obviously there's a lot of good lessons learned through this, and yeah, we're going to implement, you know, what we can, you know, with the resources we have, knowing that there will be some limitations.
And just speaking of resources, I just wanted to mention for anybody listening that 211 does have a resource list and is a very good source for information for those that are seeking information on how to address mental health issues. And there are abundant resources in our area. The area that we really lack is the long-term placement for acute mental health care. And so, as you know, we utilize the hospital setting, but you can't utilize that setting long-term. And Yankton is really, it's 350 miles away, and that really causes a lot of challenges for families to create that distance when you have to go that far to receive long-term care.
All right. Rapid City Chief of Police Carl Jagaris, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Pennington County Sheriff Kevin Tome, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you.